Hello, this is episode number something or other. I'm going to talk to you about the three lessons I've had with my year 10 GCSE computing class this week. We've had three lessons. Some weeks we have two, some weeks we have three. So we had a lesson on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. So this is lesson 16. Monday morning, period one. And I always find this tough. The class are really quiet, hard to get them to respond to things. And I'm starting to, you know, explore and think of different ways of getting them to engage more with the lesson first thing on a Monday morning. So the focus for Monday's lesson was understanding about CPUs and the factors that affect performance. So we were looking particularly at clock speed, cache size, and the number of cores. Now, before we started this in the lesson, I wanted to refer back to something which was from the previous week. In the previous week, I'd asked them in their exercise books to write a program that would ask a person's name, then it would ask for two numbers and then add them together and then test it. And they had to write it in their books and the results that they got. Over the weekend, I'd marked their books, and when I looked, I realized that there was lots of common errors that children were putting in. There were, for example, they were using input to collect a number, but they had forgotten that input in Python always returns a string, and yet they wanted to perform calculations on that, so they had to add in the conversion to change it into an integer. So quite a few children had missed that. So when they came in today, sorry, on Monday for the lesson, I said to them that I noticed lots of people had the same problem, that they took two numbers, so let's just say one and one, and then when they added the two numbers together and print the output of that, the answer was 11. And why would the answer be 11? So it wasn't immediately clear to them, so I then gave them a few examples of things that people had put on the, and I wrote these on the board. So we had something like number equals input, choose a number, and then we had number equals int, open brackets, input, choose a number. And I had two or three other variations with mistakes into that. So I then asked the class to choose, out of the four solutions on the board, to choose the one that they thought was most likely to work. So there was, I've seen this before, where one of the sort of clever kids in the class who tends to get things right quite a lot of time chose the wrong answer. And the majority of the class wants to go along with that one. So I asked the clever kid to explain why he chose that answer. And most of the class went along with that, still wanted to vote for it. Then there was a girl in the class, and she chose another answer. And the answer was the correct answer, but only two people agreed with her. And I asked her to explain why she chose that one. And then two other people went with other answers and so on. So we had some discussion around which was the correct one. Then I asked the children to use Python to actually test it. And in the end, we realized that the girl who chose the correct answer had chosen the correct one. So we spent a little bit of time trying to figure out why this was so. So I suppose really what I'm learning from this is that I'm getting more familiar with understanding that input returns a string. And if you want to do calculations, you have to convert it into an integer. But then sometimes if you want to print a statement or an express, you want to print something and it's got a string and an integer, you then have to convert it to a string at the same time, which is causing some people a little bit of difficulty trying to make that connection. So the second part of the lesson was, so they had their exercise books after I'd marked them, and in our school we've got now this whole school marking policy that we've all agreed on together, where we highlight and identify any literacy issues. For example, if they've misspelled something or capital letter in the wrong place, punctuation, that sort of thing. And also actions. So I'd identified in most of the children's book an action that they needed to do. It was to either extend the program that they'd written or add something in to correct it or something along those lines. So they had some time to correct their books. And then for the third part of the lesson, we then had a live demonstration using some pupils as examples to try and understand about how clock speed, cache size, and the number of cores would affect the performance of a CPU. Now, this was a very last-minute idea. Literally, before the class came in, I had an idea about how this might work. So I got two pieces of A4 paper, and I divided both of them up into 16 squares on the piece of paper, like a grid. And on one of the grids, I wrote down 16, such a fairly simple mathematical problems, like 3 times 2, 1 plus 4, 76 plus 2, the square root of 16, 4 squared, 1,000 divided by 2. So the kind of ones that you could just pretty quickly work out within a second or two. So I stuck them onto a notice board in one part of the room, so I called them the instructions, and then I had a blank grid in another part of the room, not too far away, which was, so same 16 squares, and it was blank. So then I asked for, I chose a child that I thought would be pretty willing to stand up in front of the class. And we said, this person, they're going to be like the calculator. They're going to process calculations. And this person's, you know, pretty good at maths, so they'll do a great job. And then I chose another child from the class, a volunteer, and said, right, this, okay, so you, so this, we had Joe as the calculator, and Luca, you're going to be like a bus. You're going to go and you're going to read the instruction, you're going to go to Joe, the calculator, and you're going to tell him what the problem is, he's going to solve it, and then you're going to go over here and you're going to store it in the memory. So we did this for about 3 or 4 cycles, and it seemed to be painfully slow. So Luca would go over and say to Joe, 3 times 2, Joe would say, 6. So Luke could go over and write 6 down in the grid. Then he went back, 1 plus... just had an interruption then. So this, what's going on then is Luke is reading the instructions, taking them to Joe, and then recording them in memory. So pause, everybody. What can we do to speed this up? So somebody said, get Luca to move faster. Okay, so Luca, move faster. So we got Luca to run backwards and forwards faster. But still, we saw that there was other things we could do. So we did that for another few, 2 or 3 cycles. And then we said, right, pause. What else can we do? I said, get him to run even faster again. Well, we'll probably end up burning a track in the carpet if we do that, because he was going pretty fast. So then I said, well, what else could we do? And then somebody put their hand up and said, get another bus. Ah, great, yeah. So the person who suggested we get another bus, right, you can be the other bus. So this was Chris. So then we had Chris and Luca. So they're reading one instruction each, and they're running backwards and forwards. And then we said, get another bus. So we got a third bus. Now, then we start to find out that what we're doing is we've got a queue of people waiting for calculations to be solved. So Joe is the only calculator, and we've got 3 buses, and they're queuing up. So then we pause again. What can we do now? So somebody said, get another calculator. So I said, oh, that's just like a CPU with an extra core on it. So we've got 2 cores. Somebody said, you get triple cores, because then you got 1 core, 1 bus per core. Okay, so we do that. So we could then see very quickly how we were actually running out of instructions. It was going so fast. So I had to pause, and we had to start all over again. But that very quite simply demonstrated the impact that having more cores and more buses had on it, and speeding up the clock speed. So when we started all over again, I said, oh, there's something else we can do. I've just thought about it. There's this thing called cache memory. So I can give each of the buses, I can give them a piece of paper, and they can store 3 instructions on it. So they're not having to run backwards and forwards quite as many times. In fact, they would only have to make a third of the same amount of journeys. So I gave each one a piece of paper. And what I hadn't allowed for was there was a little bit of overlap, so some of them were copying the same instructions as each other. But it was a little bit of fun, and it was just a little bit more lively than our Monday lessons normally are, and they could see. So, and later in the week, we were able to refer back to that, and I think we still need to keep going back and referring to the fact, you know, cores and all that sort of thing. So I then set a homework at the end of Monday's lesson, and I asked them on a piece of paper to draw a cartoon drawing explaining what had actually happened in our lesson regarding Joe and Luca and the extra buses and the extra calculators and the bits of paper. And I wanted them to label it with terms like input, output, memory, cache, instruction, clock speed, cache size, and cores. Now, we then had our next lesson, which was on Tuesday. So this is second lesson on a Tuesday, and typically in a week we have one lesson is computing theory and the other lesson is programming. So in our second lesson, I wanted them to really understand about iteration using loops. So started off by asking them if they understood what iteration was and trying to, so that took a few minutes to try and get to us agreeing that iteration basically means to keep doing something until you achieve a desired result. So then I wrote a piece of code on the board in Python, which goes something like this. It's 4a in range, bracket 1,11, close bracket, colon. And then on the next line, and there's an indent, print bracket a, close bracket. So I then asked them to write that in their books, but to try and predict what they thought would happen. So some of the children wrote in their books that if you did that, you'd get A. Somebody else said it would print A 11 times, the letter A. Somebody said, oh, it'll print 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we had a variety. So then I said, right, now you need to test it and see what actually happens. So they did. And then they had to record in their books the difference between what they thought would happen and what actually happened. Then I gave them another example. This time it was 4A in range, 1, 11, 3. So somebody in the class said, no, that won't work because you've given it three numbers. And if you give something a range, it expects two numbers. But then there's a girl in our class who keeps figuring things out this really, really quickly. And she said, no, it'll go 1, 4, 7, 10. And again, people were like, sort of, is this right? Is this right? So I think people decided they were going to gamble on her getting it right this time, and she did. She got it right. And she was able to explain about how the range this time was going to jump in steps of three, and that the three, the last number in that argument, was steps. So this was, I mean, this in a way, this was just building on something we'd done in the previous lesson. Then I showed them how you can set up a list in Python. So it was list equals open square bracket, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, close bracket. And this time for A and list, colon, print A. So what's going to happen? So again, predict, did it actually work out the way you wanted? And then we looked at another example. This time we had the same list for A in list, print A times 5 and see what would happen. So we've got iteration, lists, loops all working really seamlessly together. And then I gave them a challenge where I wanted them to write a program that would ask for a number, and then what it would do, it would then print the first 20 multiples. So if you typed in 5, it would go 5, 10, 15, 20, and so on, up to 100. So that's Tuesday's lesson. And then today, Wednesday, we've just had our last lesson of the day, and they had a homework where they had to bring in two examples of computers. One had to be a low-spec computer, another one had to be a high-spec. So I then started off today, well, what do we mean when we say spec? And one child said, yeah, spec is specification. So we talked about what that would actually mean. So on the board, we compared two computers. So somebody had brought in the specification for a MacBook Pro, and somebody else had brought in the specification for a Raspberry Pi. And we compared things like the number of cores, the processor, clock speed. So the MacBook Pro, the one we looked at, it was a 3.4 gigahertz, whereas the Raspberry Pi was 700 megahertz. So we're looking at the number of zeros difference between them and the price differentials, the number of cache, so the amount of cache and the number of cores. So that provided for some lively discussions about how you could buy 100 Raspberry Pis for the same price as a MacBook Pro. Then we went back to refer to list from last lesson, where they had, and this time I put three names in the list. So I put the names in, I think it was like Michelle, Tom, and Marie. And I said, so we've got a list that's got three strings in them. And again, this is a very wide mixed ability class. So sometimes I'm asking questions where it must seem so obvious to some in the class, but others are finding it really difficult to answer the question. So I chose one child in the class and said, why am I putting inverted commas or quotation marks around these words here? And he said, oh, that's to separate them. And at that point, you could see some children thinking, oh my goodness, no, come on, it's a string,
tell him it's a string. And he, and this child wasn't able to. So I said, we gave some more examples, and eventually he was able to get it. Yeah, it's a string, and that's why we've put quotation marks around it. So then I said, now, we've got a list here with three names in. If I now, in the interactive mode, type in list, square bracket, two, close square bracket, what's going to happen? So I asked the class, and we got five different answers, from syntax error to it'll print the list twice. And then we had somebody said it'll say Tom, somebody said it'll say Marie, and somebody else said it'll say Michelle. So I decided I was going to offer them a prize, which was they could have 5 minutes of some reward time at the end of the lesson if they could guess the right answer. So we had people voting for different answers, and then I decided to remove three of the answers so that we just had two, the right answer and the wrong answer. And the majority of the class picked the right answer and four didn't. So I asked, before sort of trying to be a poker face, before giving away the right answer, I asked different groups to justify why they thought their answer would work. And what it confused them was, the people who got it wrong, it was the number two in a list of three. So some people thought it would choose the second thing in the list, whereas it was actually the tooth, as in there was zero, one, and two. So it was the last in a list of three. So then I suddenly had this idea where I thought, hang on, we've done a lesson where we've used the random module to bring in a random number. We could actually create a piece of Python script that will randomly choose a name from a list, and that's not too much of a departure. So I asked them to work in pairs and to create a piece of script that would have a list of five people's names from the class, and each time you ran the program, it would randomly choose a name. So for some, that was quite tough. Some, that was, they did that very quickly. So I asked them to add in extra functionality. So one person had a loop where it would ask, do you want to choose another name? And if you typed in anything, it would choose another name. If you typed in no, it would stop. Somebody else did one where it had two lists, first names and surnames, and it would randomly mix up people's names in the class. And then somebody else who was a bit more creative chose one that would have, it would match boyfriends with girlfriends, and, you know, say something like Tom is going out with Michelle, Paul's going out with Marie, that sort of thing. And that was pretty much where we got to at the end of the lesson. Right, I hope you or be able to make use of these podcasts that I'm recording. I've spent about half an hour a week recording them. I'm using it myself, I suppose, as an aid memoir, but I'm really looking forward to receiving your comments. It's nice to receive positive comments. People are saying, yeah, it's great, thank you very much, Alan, keep doing it. But I would like to encourage some of you to be a bit more critical, to say, why did you think it was a good idea to do it that way? Or do you think the children will struggle with this thing and another? Because then that'll sort of engage me a little bit more in the two-way discussion about the podcasts. I hope when you found this, you found it through Computing at School, and that you'll already be a member of Computing at School. If you're not a member of Computing at School, shame on you. You really do need to join. It's a free organization. It's a non-profit. You sign up, there's a community space you can sign up, there's emails that you can have notifications of all the different things that happen. It's a really good group to join up, and you can just search for it online. If you type in community computing at school, you'll be able to find it. You've been listening to Alan O'Donoghue, also known as Techno Teacher on Twitter, and I'm a teacher of computing. Been teaching this for 2 years in a high school called Our Ladies in Preston in Fulwood. I'm doing training events on Python, Scratch, and just general teaching computing. The courses have pretty much filled up. If you want to know any other ways I can help, then get in touch. You can email me or send me a tweet at TechnoTeacher. If you want to send me a message, you can get me on the Computing at School community page. Thank you for listening. Have a great half-term holiday. Bye.